Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everybody. Welcome to episode 73 of The Stare Down. It's our weekly sports talk and real estate show. We're coming to you a day late because of the long holiday weekend, but we are excited to be here. I'm Sean Carpenter in Columbus, Ohio. We got our buddy Bill Risser in St. Petersburg, Florida. Todd Meininger in Cumming, Georgia, actually on vacation from Cumming, Georgia. And St. George, is that what you just said?
St. George Island, yes, sir.
St. George Island. And then we have a special guest, the heart of Texas. The eyes have been on Texas this week with everything that's happened in the last week. And our good buddy, Ryan Bocross, who's been a guest on the show a couple times, is joining us both to give a recap of the amazing sports week centered around the state of Texas, some good and some bad. And he's also going to give us some insights into Hurricane Harvey and the aftermath and all the great work that he and some people in his neighborhood and some of his friends have done. So, Ryan, let's start with you. How are you, buddy?
Thanks, guys. I'm good. I'm no spring chicken anymore, and so all of this physical work and and everything has sure made me feel 40.
Good. Well, we're gonna get to your story in just a second. Let me check in on the other regular guys. Bill, how are you, buddy? Good week in New York City with Cindy and the U.S. Open.
Yeah. So we had a great time. It was kind of odd, you know. Ryan, I think you'll get this. It was kind of odd doing what we're doing and having so much fun, and I really refrained from posting as much as I probably would have because it felt like maybe inappropriate because of what was going on down in Texas. And so there were a few posts, but it would have been a whole lot different, I think, because sometimes you just got to know what's appropriate. Right. So.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good call. And Todd, you got down to St. George's this weekend, right? Had a little R&R.
Yeah. I got lucky enough to be able to come down here and stay. Just having a fantastic time. I've sent you boys some texts. Successful in crabbing, has some blue crabs. We're going to eat some of that tonight. Just an awesome time. It's just south of Apalachicola, Florida, just to give you a reference point. But Bill, kind of what you were referring to, and Sean and I, you and I like to talk about a lot, is perspective, right? Everything seems fun and important. And then, you know, there's some real life stuff going on that garners our attention and maybe makes us a little less showy about the good time we're having, maybe in New York or in Florida. So I appreciate you saying that, Bill.
Right. So let's start there, guys, because it's we've talked about it many times through the 72 plus episodes of The Stare Down, that sports is life and life is sports. But really, when life is life, it becomes just truly a game. Ryan, let's start with you, buddy. You are based in the Woodlands area. For people who don't know, a little bit, what, about 30 miles, 25 miles north of Houston. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, depending on what part of Houston, obviously with the size of Houston, but yeah, it takes me anywhere between 35, 45 minutes to get into the heart of Houston. So,
okay. So you're on the northern outskirts, but you consider yourself from Houston. When you're traveling the country, you tell people you're from Houston. You don't say the Woodlands. You don't say some other city. And as most people listening to this know, Hurricane Harvey and really Tropical Storm Harvey and then Hurricane Harvey again, really took a toll on your hometown and your area. Why don't you give maybe the quick kind of timeline of the events, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the amazing rescue efforts and just some of the cool things that you've been able to do to help your fellow Houstonites and fellow Americans down there. I guess the rain started today's Monday. So the rain started what, last Friday?
Yeah, we started to see a few just scattered showers on Thursday, but the rain, the real rain, the bands from the hurricane really started coming into the Houston area and started hitting us late Friday afternoon. And from there, really, we didn't get any relief as far as rain until I would say late Monday night, even into some scattered showers Tuesday. So, yeah, you know, the hurricane hit much further south than us is who took the direct hit down there, Corpus Christi area, closer to the Texas-Mexico border. And then it went inland or came inland down there, started moving up the coast a little bit, and then took a little U-turn, went back out into the coast, kind of regained some steam from the warm Gulf waters, and then pretty much came back on land right over Houston. And because of another front that was coming from the north down, it kind of just made it sit here for a few days. And that's really what hit us, was the fact that this storm, this system just kind of sat over the Houston area for, you know, a good 3.5 days.
And Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, but the difference between this and like a Katrina, which obviously hit further east of you in New Orleans, there with the water of New Orleans and the way the storm kind of came up on the land, the storm surge of the water hit, but typical storm there where the eye of the storm, the rain came, the rain stopped, the rain came again, and the storm surge, whereas you guys just kind of had pretty much 4.5 solid days of nothing but rain, right? Really like no let up on the rain, right?
Right. Yeah. That's pretty much exactly the way that it went. You know, again, us not being in the landfall of the actual hurricane, we didn't get a lot of the wind, and a lot of the whipping rain. It was just a torrential downpour for those, you know, 3.5, 4.5 days.
So walk us through kind of the, your family. There was really no mandatory evacuation in the area. And that, I don't know that we're not here to argue that. So talk us through when did you guys finally, maybe you and your family, you and Maggie and the kids, feel that you were safe enough to go help some of your resident neighbors, and how far did the help have to go? Was it in your immediate neighborhood, or was it, you know, 30 miles away? You didn't go down to Rockport or anything like that, right?
No. So really probably, late Sunday or Sunday afternoon, was when we realized, a good buddy of mine, you know, we're texting back and forth, just kind of checking on each other. And, he kind of sent a text to about 4 or 5 of us other guys and said, you know, thoughts and prayers for these people that are, in low lying areas and taking on water, you know, only goes so far. It's time for us to get some shit done. And so, you know, we loaded up the trucks, we threw our waders on, we pulled boats out. And, for those first 2 days, the latter part of Sunday and all day Monday, we stayed up here, on the north side and were, you know, pulling people out with boats from apartment complexes, a couple of neighborhoods that are, you know, normally within about a 10 or 15 minute drive from the house. And, you know, with all of the rains and the road blockage and, you know, law enforcement trying to turn us around from going into certain areas, you know, it took us a while to get through to some of these folks. Eventually we were able to, and you know, that those first couple of days we pulled out a ton of folks. By that time there weren't really a whole lot of shelters set up. So most of those guys, we kind of dropped them on dry land and had them call some friends or family to come pick them up, because there wasn't really anywhere. The infrastructure wasn't set up yet for us to start really coordinating with the authorities to drop folks off and have them bus to a shelter or anything like that. As the week progressed, this little group of us, 5 or 6 guys, turned into a huge operation. One of the buddies, we created a headquarters out of one of the churches here in the Woodlands, and without going into too much detail, there's a lot of chatter online and through a couple of different kind of walkie-talkie apps, and that's when the real coordination started happening, and we set up a command center in the church. And by the time the week was over, we had probably dispatched and deployed somewhere close to 1,000 vessels and probably somewhere close to 3,000 or more men and women. Don't get me wrong there. There were some ladies that were in that. So personally, I was on a boat all the way through till Thursday. Thursday, I was just kind of feeling the physical brunt of everything that I had already done through the week. And so I stayed at command and helped coordinate and dispatch. And even on Thursday, as we were, you know, 2-3 days out of the rain, I still coordinated probably close to 200 rescue calls out of our command center just on Thursday afternoon.
And Ryan, when you say command center, is that just a totally homegrown command center that you built on Facebook, or what does that mean?
Yeah, it was really, it started off as just grassroots. Eventually we were able to coordinate efforts, and because of the resources and connections and relationships of a lot of these guys that ended up coming together, we ended up with direct lines to FEMA, all of the county judges and emergency management centers and law enforcement authorities. We sent on Thursday, we sent three caravans out to Beaumont with probably about 75 vessels and even more men. And in order to get through some of the roadblocks and to get around some of the law enforcement officials and emergency management officials that were keeping roads closed and keeping people out, we had federal agents and State Department personnel on these vehicles in these convoys to get through these roadblocks. So what started with just five or six of us guys kind of getting together with a John boat and a couple of 4x4 trucks really turned out to be a huge operation that, and not to brag, but man, I mean, we saved hundreds, if not thousands of lives through the course of this operation that we put together.
Brian, give a guy like me in the Midwest, are these just guys that are 9-to-5 job guys who have a bass boat and with a single outboard engine loading it up in the back of a pickup truck? Is that how it really got together?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, some of them were coming in on trailers. Some of them were deeper water boats. Most of them were, yeah, your everyday, redneck dude with a flat bottom John boat, and maybe a 25 horsepower motor on the back, finding a spot in the road and putting that thing in the water and just traversing the streets of Houston. On Wednesday, we drove down into town, into kind of the west side of Houston called Bear Creek Memorial area. And we were dispatched to a specific spot. By the time we got there, the authorities said, we have plenty of help. There's enough boats already in the water. Go check this spot. And we couldn't get to the other spot because those areas, one of them specifically was a retirement home with about 85 people that needed to be pulled out. We couldn't get there because it was somewhat an island. In order to get to that spot, we would have to get, across water to dry land again to get them. So we kind of turned the operations into a little something different where we found a road that was blocked, went in and talked to the officer that was there. We've got boats. I can dispatch, dozens of boats to this area in a matter of minutes. And he led us through the block. We put in at Eldridge and I-10. I mean, literally right at the underpass of the freeway. We backed the truck up, dropped the boat. And we were, traversing the city streets back up in there. One apartment complex was being evacuated. There were dozens of boats already in there. Thankfully, the Red Cross had already set up a drop-off point for us, and they had buses at one of the ends of the streets further down. So as we were collecting people, we were, driving them or boating them to the end of Memorial Drive, dropping them off on dry land and then getting right back at it.
Hey, Ryan, not counting when you were on top of an overflowed river or creek bed, what was the deepest water that you saw, like, on a city street or through a city neighborhood?
No, I mean, that area specifically, there were certain parts that we were going over where you knew there was a stop sign underneath you and you couldn't see it. So, your average stop sign is somewhere between 6 and 8 foot tall, depending on what part of town. We're going under stop lights, traffic lights that are 5 feet over our head. So, you don't know how high those typically sit, maybe 15, 20 feet high. And, so there were definitely some areas that we're hitting water that's 10 foot deep or more for sure.
Did you have to deal with any wildlife at all when you were out there?
Not really. One of the things that you guys probably seen on the media was floating ant piles. and so there was a lot of that. This one specific area that we were in, there was already you know, not wildlife, but their hazards were, there was oil slicks already on the top of the water. And you could smell the gasoline just floating in the water because of all of the submerged vehicles. But as far as wildlife, no, most of the places that we worked in were urban areas. So, I mean, of course, we pulled dogs out. You know, didn't see very many cats. They're all probably hiding up in trees or on roofs. But, you know, it was mostly people and their pets.
You know, Ryan, as deep as the water was across really the entire expanse of Houston, which is a massive city, looking back, because there wasn't high winds and a lot of power lines down, that must have been huge, because power lines down in the water would have completely blocked off areas, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the concerns was, you know, power still to the houses that are submerged. And so there were some specific things that the Office of Emergency Management and the city and the counties were doing to shut power off to those areas that had a certain amount of water in them, because, you know, you get out into the water and you've got live, you know, you've got live power running from all of these houses, and you've got neighborhoods of hundreds of homes. So there was that potential. It seemed as though the authorities kind of thankfully thought ahead on some of that and cut certain powers, certain parts of the grid off. So there was, while the concern was there, it wasn't the first thing on our mind as we were hopping into the water, grabbing these folks. So.
But I got to think for both you guys in the boats, the headquarters, like bivouacs that were set up, as well as the people in the apartments, and, you know, I mean, they go up to their second floor or, you know, some of them have to be thinking, I got to plug my phone in so I can talk to somebody and tell them where I'm at. Right.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, you know, the preparations, a lot of folks, I think, were ready. You could see it on social media. A lot of people were making the recommendations. You plug your phones in before the waters start coming, before the power potentially goes out. Make sure you're charged up. You know, buy portable battery chargers as you're out and about to make sure that you are able to keep your devices charged. So I think there was some good preparation when it came to that. And, you know, a lot of when I stayed back at headquarters and was dispatching, we were still able to get contact numbers for folks that were requesting rescues. And we were able to, in most cases, get in contact with them through their cell phones. So I think that was a huge thing that preparation wise people were ready for.
Todd, Bill, any questions? I have a follow-up for Ryan. Ryan, share with us maybe a special story of a family or somebody that you were able to help, whether it's a child or an older person, anything that really stands out that you'll remember kind of for the rest of your life on, as far as someone you put in your boat or helped, you know, in that
situation?
Yeah,
there's quite a few for sure. You know, I'm one of many, and this story, you know, could probably be repeated 100 times across all of the different guys that were out there. But, you know, yeah, just having a 4 or 5 year old kid's arms wrapped around your neck as you're walking them out of an apartment complex, or I guess in this case it was a townhome, and holding her little, you know, puppy, to get them to the boat was one for sure that, you know, just wrecked me. And, just to think about what's going through her mind. And, you know, there was a teenager on our boat at one time, and she was just full blown in tears. And, you know, she just old enough to kind of grasp the severity, but not old enough to fully understand the magnitude of everything, you know, just mature enough, but not quite mature enough. And then, you know, one case I think that will really probably stick with me is, I think it was a God thing for sure, man, but we were pretty much wrapped up in one area. It was the area with the oil slicks and the gasoline floating everywhere. The sheriffs, who were kind of scouting for us on jet skis, started instructing us to get out of the area because of the hazmat situation. And so we were on our way back to the boat and trailer. And somehow, out of the corner of my eye, I thought I saw something, a guy waving his arms or whatever. So we turn around, and sure enough, about 400 yards from the street that we were on in the boat, he was waving us down. And so I got out of the boat and walked back there to, you know, go get them and load them up. And there was a pregnant lady with him. She was probably 7.5, 8 months pregnant, and high blood pressure. So you could just see she was just dazed and had zero strength. And so I literally carried this pregnant woman probably about 300, 400 yards from the back of this apartment complex to the boat. And she spoke very little English. And so it was hard to communicate with her, and the guy that was with her, I don't know what their relation was. I don't think they were husband and wife. There were three of them. They had another lady with them. He tried to translate for us. My Spanish is not great. So, you know, we were just able to get enough information from her to know that this was potentially a medical emergency. And we didn't have anything on the boat, but thankfully we were able to get her over to the Red Cross drop-off point, and they had EMTs and paramedics, and so they were able to get her right away and get her taken care of. But to think that story and the one with the little girl who had her arms wrapped around my neck could be told, you know, hundreds of times, man, across the city from just some Joe Schmo with a boat. You know, that's the kind of stuff that's going to stick with me forever.
Well, Ryan, go ahead, Bill. I want to let you.
Yeah, I just want Ryan, in the lead up to the hurricane, you had posted a couple of times socially going, hey, I've lived here my whole life. I've been through this before, you know, and when a hurricane comes and goes like it's supposed to, you're in a different situation. What happened, no one could predict these incredible rain numbers, right? I mean, that's really the difference in this story, right?
Yeah, I think I heard that, you know, the highest spot was 52 inches
right.
Measured. And so, yeah, very difficult to estimate and predict
you
what
can't.
This thing was going right. to do, especially not knowing if it was going to come inland and then head it, you know, straight up through Texas and fizzle out. But as soon as it took that turn and went back out into the coast and
right.
kind of regained steam before it came back up in Houston, it was really at that point that, you know, we kind of had that moment.
Yeah, this is different. This is not
here
the
it comes.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I you know, not to pull anything away from Harvey, but so I'm here in St. Pete, Florida. You know, I've been here for 8 months. And right now we're being told, get your stuff ready because Irma's coming across the Atlantic. And so
I'm watching that too. I saw
part of those tracks look like they want to come up the east coast of Florida or west coast of Florida or east coast. We don't know for sure. So I'm just going to ask you as a veteran of this stuff. I guess what do I need to do? Just pay attention, listen real hard.
Yeah. You know, I mean, as frustrating as it was dealing with the authorities over the course of this week, and some of the, you know, what we still feel was misinformation and all of that. And there's a joke from us that are here and that are vets that went through this, that, you know, all of the transplants, because of course Houston has, you know, we've acquired a ton of transplants over the course of the last few years, that people were, you know, just over preparing. They were buying out every little thing that they could from the stores and you know, the shelves were just ridiculously empty. And of course, some of us, again, we're laughing at them. And you know, but in the defense of all of that, I don't think that you can over prepare really. Because some of these things you just never know. So yeah, listening to the authorities and kind of what their recommendations are, is huge. And, you know, water, non-perishable goods, toiletries that, you know, are easily accessible. You know, all of those things that are, important for, you know, survival for a few days or a week without power. You know, if people here in Houston didn't know how to prepare, it could have been a ton worse than it really was.
Right.
Hey, Sean, Bill, and Ryan. Bill, being a Florida boy, have a little pantry and have some stuff available all year round. Obviously hurricane season is June to December, but I think what Ryan, referenced is the last minute guys that go to the grocery stores and are trying to buy water. You could go online and probably find what survival needs you need. And I do it sooner than later and just have it year round. But just jumping in, Sean, God, you, me, and Bill are never this quiet and attentive, right? And just, we could feel the respect of what Ryan, the tale he's saying. And I've never shaken Ryan's hand, but I feel like I know him thanks to this show and social media. But, you know, respect, humility, perspective, just, I've been following this story through Ryan on social media. Just, wow, just so impressed. And one of my favorite parts was him going, you know, spending time with the family. I think he took him to Topgolf and just getting away, right? I mean, you can only donate so much time and volunteer so much your effort. You got to take a couple hours and spend time with the family. But truly humbled by the story. Florida boy, lived through hurricanes. Nothing like this, right? There are some doozies. I think Hugo was a big one, but I never was in the trenches like Ryan was. So again, nothing but respect for his story and what he did. I mean, talk about walking the walk. His community needed him, and darn, he showed up and was tireless in his efforts. And I have nothing but respect for him and thousands of other men and women what they did in Houston.
I want to say, Ryan, before I turn it back to you, obviously on behalf of Bill and Todd and myself, we thank you, but we also thank all of your friends and your neighbors and your people that you never even met, but we're doing the same thing you were. You've said it many times. It wasn't just you, and it's not a Ryan Bocross thing. It's a Houston, Texas thing. But what you did is you didn't just sit back and say, gosh, I feel bad for those people. You actually said, I'm going to go do something for those people. Take us through to where they are today, September 4th, kind of what's happening with the recovery or the repair efforts. The water, I think, is subsiding every day a little bit. Take us through that really quick. And then you got a couple websites you're going to share with us that Bill might be able to put in the show notes on how maybe some people can help.
Yeah. So I guess as we started to shift from search and rescue to search and recovery and now recovery and rebuild, not everybody could get out on those boats and do everything. But, now we're, and again, not to diminish the story of the men and women who got out on boats and who got out on their jacked up 4x4 redneck trucks and went out and put waders on and pulled people out. But now is when you really start to see that human connection, that fact that, you know, helping our fellow man, these folks that have lost everything or had 3 or 4 feet of water in their house. Our church, a lot of churches, even non-faith organizations, you're just seeing a huge outpour of people giving of their time and going into these homes. And, you know, I've seen it, and we stopped and did some ourselves and dropped food off. Just groups of 20 people go into a house, rip up carpet and flooring, cut out drywall, disinfect studs and do all of these things to a house in just a couple of hours, and then go right next door and do the exact same thing. These are folks that, you know, maybe just have a couple of people in their family, and there's no way that they could do this on their own. And as that moisture sits, you know, mold and mildew and all of these things start to grow and collect. And our city has come together in such a huge way over the last couple of days to get out there and to get these homes taken care of. And that'll be going on for a long, long time. And even after all of that is done, it's, you know, yes, there's help. Some people had flood insurance. Some people didn't have flood insurance. You know, there's FEMA disaster relief and all of these things. But there's still folks who have to basically rebuild their entire life. Furniture, clothes, electronics, just the things that make a home home. These folks have lost all of that. And so, you know, that's the biggest thing that we see moving forward that will be needed, is the effort to just really help these people rebuild and start to regain some sort of normal life again. And so while there's a lot of great organizations that are coming together, we've started to really see families just from folks that we're connected to that are falling through the cracks in all of this and aren't getting the help they need yet, because still the resources are limited. So what we've started to coordinate is this Adopt a Family initiative, and folks are sending us names and specific needs for families and specifically the real estate community around the country. And I'm going to try to keep it together here, guys, but damn the real estate industry, man. Amazing people have come together, and we've got, I'm not in front of it right now, but I wouldn't bet that we've got 25 or 30 families on this list that my wife has created, that have all been adopted by either an individual, a real estate office, a group. We've got, I was the Tulsa, Oklahoma Board of Realtors. We're working directly with them to send them names of families that need to be adopted. And when I mean a family adopted, like, you know, how old are your kids? What kind of clothes do they need? How much do you need to get them school supplies? And these folks from all around the country are either shipping these things because they're able to purchase them where they are, or they're sending gift cards. They're going on to Amazon and they're purchasing specific needs. You know, a lot of these big organizations are here with a ton of money, and not to diminish the work that they do, because they have the funds to continue the efforts for a long time, and all of that stuff is really helpful. But just the boots on the ground, the specific needs, you know, not to be somewhat graphic, but to help with some of these efforts, and to help people start to heal. You know, I heard an example of, just a woman who lost all of her clothing and her undergarments. And, you know, she said one of the biggest pieces of her starting to heal was to be able to order the type of bra that she wears, so that she's comfortable. You know, those aren't the things that folks really normally think of when they think of disaster relief. And so what we've done is we've started this effort to put families together with specific people across the country that are willing to adopt this family and take care of their specific needs.
That's really cool. Todd?
My initial question is, a guy in, I'm here in Florida, but lives in Atlanta, Georgia. My question to you, and maybe Sean, we could address later, but what do I do to help? That was my initial question. And I think Ryan answered it a little bit. My other question is more on the lighter side, the Cajun Navy from so much pub. Do you guys have a little group name that kind of kept you together?
Well, we called ourselves, what did we call ourselves? Woodlands High Water Recovery Group. So throughout all of the stuff that we were coordinating and communicating with all of the apps, we were in the Woodlands High Water Recovery Group. But with that said, I can't tell you how many Louisiana license plates came through our command center to be deployed and dispatched from us. Specifically, Monday afternoon when I finished up with my small group of guys. The first group of us that kind of started going out and doing work, there's a road that cuts through literally right around the corner from my house that cuts through to a different part of town, and it crosses two of the major creeks, and they were impassable. And so there was, again, basically an island in between these two creeks where a retirement community sits, a couple of, pretty new developments, D.R. Horton developments, and then a couple of trailer home parks. And some of it was rather frustrating, because this is where we started to run into I hate to get real again, but we started to run into a pissing contest between some of the different levels of law enforcement and emergency personnel. We had full clearance from the fire marshal here in South Montgomery County to drop as many boats as we needed to get in there and go get people. The sheriffs were blocking, they had the road blockade set up, and the sheriffs were trying to hold us from going in because they said that this was, you know, this is our scene, and we've been instructed not to let anybody go through. So, you know, we probably wasted about 30 minutes going back and forth with these guys, calling the fire marshal out, calling a lieutenant to the scene and all that kind of stuff. And finally, one of these guys from the Cajun Navy, which again, I just happened upon this long line of boats sitting at the intersection. I parked my truck on the side of the road and said, throw me on a boat, I'm going with you guys. Most of the license plates that were in this line of boats were Louisiana license plates. And that was, you know, this Cajun Navy crew that came over were part of it. And, you know, eventually we just told the cops, like, you're going to have to stop us. You know, this guy, I'm going to pick up this barricade and we're going to start driving trucks back this road, dropping boats in the water. And, you're going to have to physically stop us from doing this. And eventually the sheriff just kind of threw his arms up and said, you know, you're get at it, guys. Like, you know, I'm not going to be able to stop 50 of y'all from doing this. But you're on your own. Like if stuff goes wrong, then, you know, we're not sending guys in after you. And of course these guys didn't care. They're just like, we know how to do this. We're in. So we spent about the next 3.5 hours running back and forth, pulling people out. So the Cajun Navy, man, those guys, you know, as officially unofficial as they are and were, they were all over the place and amazing people to work with from a coordination standpoint. And not even from that, man, these guys are amazing on their boats. One of the creeks that we crossed had pretty good, you know, pretty good current. And to watch these guys maneuver these little John boats that they're coming over in, you know, those bayous and swamps that they're dealing with over there in Louisiana, there's hardly any current in those things over there. But over here, man, when we started getting into those places where the current was tough, they knew what they were doing. And they got us across and we were able to get to some folks. So, yeah, you know, just those kind of stories and those kind of efforts went on all around the city. And it was just amazing.
Hey Ryan, twofold.
Guys from all walks of life.
Hey, twofold with that. One, it's well documented what happened 10 years ago, Katrina. But I read also that a lot of the displaced citizens in New Orleans ended up in Houston. So I think there was some the mutual love there. Got, again, you know, the Texans step up, to get help from your neighboring state, that must have been pretty special.
Yeah, man, we had a machine, man. This guy was from Detroit. That was his call name on the dispatch system. And this guy was tireless, drove whatever, 18 hours down from Detroit with his boat. And even after most of us were done here in the Houston area, he rode off with one of the convoys to the Beaumont Port Arthur area. And I coordinated with him for another 2 days. I mean, he was with a group out there. But, you know, that's just to tell you how far some of these folks came from. We had a guy from Kentucky. We had emergency folks from Mexico. So on whatever day that was, it all kind of runs together. Tuesday or Wednesday, when we were down in West Houston, we had a staging point set up at Bass Pro Shops, and there were probably about 6 or 8 boats, probably about 25 or 30 Mexican emergency, you know, they had uniforms on, like they were Mexican police officers or something, you know. Here, it just, you know, right in along with the Cajun Navy guys and the dude from Detroit and the guys from the Woodlands and every other Joe, you know, the efforts were just amazing. It was just outstanding to watch just humanity come together and really care about their fellow man.
Ryan, give us the website and then let's turn the page to sports, because that's a nice segue into what life can do. What are the websites that Bill can put on the show notes? And I know there's it's something about adopt a family, and then there's also a PayPal that you can help direct money directly to people on there.
There is. So we're still working on the website. I'm hoping to have it up and done tonight. We're kind of just piecing it together. So we're going to have a place for people to submit a family that they know has a specific need. And then on the other side, somebody to submit their name and what they can handle as far as adopting a family. So that website should be up later tonight, first thing tomorrow morning, but it's simple. It's adoptaharveyfamily.com. adoptaharveyfamily.com. And so what also you said, the PayPal, we have had an amazing amount of people, just put $10, $15, $20, $100, in our PayPal directly, because while we know of families that may not have a ton of specific needs and may not need to be adopted, we still know of very specific needs that we can still handle here. And so, our PayPal is, it's paypal.me/Bocross, B-O-K-R-O-S. And you can put whatever. I mean, literally, if you think about it, $10 will buy a pack of socks for a kid who's going to have to try to go back to school here next week.
Yeah, Ryan, let me reiterate that, because I threw some money down there as well. As, and, you know, obviously I have a daughter in college, and we all have our own bills, right? We all have our own costs. Yeah. But like you just said, $10, $5, $15, any little bit can help some family with some need. You know, look around your own house at stuff that costs less than 10 bucks, but you're glad you have it in your house, right?
Yeah, man. And again, the real estate community really came together, you know, through the course of the week when we were in the thick of all the rescue efforts. I had guys throwing, you know, $20 in the PayPal account. And I can't tell you the endless number of boats and trucks that we were able to put gas in because guys were throwing us some funds. You know, we were able to buy waders for guys who didn't have waders but wanted to get out and do something and help. We were able to buy insulin to put on some of these boats so that when they got into places where a diabetic, you know, hadn't been able to get their insulin for a couple of days, or their insulin went bad because they lost power, we had insulin on the boats. So, you know, those specific needs during the rescue efforts were awesome and amazing. But again, here now, you know, yeah, we're hearing of families who, they're going to need to figure out how to get school supplies before their kids have to try to go back to school next week. And those are things that the stores around here have. So yeah, that $5, $10, $25, will go a long way for us to be able to go and just buy a couple of things that folks need. So it's not necessarily the whole, I need to adopt a family. We're able to meet some even smaller specific needs that can happen here on the ground without somebody needing to go through the whole process of adopting a family. So we're happy to facilitate that, as well. And, you know, we can document it all. I know folks are usually kind of leery about, sending money to a stranger and all of that. We're happy to send copies of receipts and all of those things to make sure that folks know that, you know, we're really trying to do the best that we can with the resources that folks from around the country are helping us with.
Todd, I'll let you finish up this segment.
Yeah, Sean, as we do sometimes on the stare down, and I know Ryan's very modest and humble, so I'll shape it this way. As a representative to all the men and women who are volunteering their time and effort and donation, let's cheers to Ryan Bocross in Houston, Texas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good call on that one.
Thanks guys. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's a little hard for me to accept some of the accolades that some folks have been putting on me. Cause I'm just one of many, many faceless guys out there that maybe don't have a social presence and haven't been able to share a lot of their experiences in this. So yeah, if you know somebody that helped out, you know, throw them some money to help them recover, because a lot of these guys use their own money out of their pocket to put gas in their truck and in their boat and just all of it. So thank you guys for that. But let's cheers the average Joe with the bass boat, you know. Let's right. Do that too.
Yeah, that's true. Well, hey, we're going to spend a bulk of the rest of the time on football, but I do want to talk on a couple things that impacted Ryan and Bill. We'll get to tennis in just a second, Bill, with all due respect. Ryan, some good news came to Houston this week in the arm of Justin Verlander.
Amen, brother. Amen.
How about that? You want to talk? So let's talk a little positives for Houston. Tell us about the trade. They pick up Verlander for really at three minor league prospects, and I think either cash or maybe a player to be named later. How's that really solidify what Houston's trying to do there to really make their first meaningful run through the playoffs?
Yeah, I'll take a step back a little bit and say, you know, the consensus here in Houston and amongst Astros fans during the trade deadline was a huge letdown, because we knew that really enabled to be able to continue to to move forward and to look at the postseason, we were going to need to shore up another arm for the rotation. While we had, you know, some solid guys with Keuchel and McHugh and who's the other guy? Anyway, I'm losing it. Anyway, the consensus was one of disappointment and upset with management of the Astros for not, you know, and word was that they tried and certain things just didn't come together, right? But you saw some of the moves that the Dodgers made and some other guys out there to really shore up their rotation. So there was a bit of frustration here. And so, you know, yeah, to see that happen and that to be made and not just for it to be a rent-a-arm for the rest of the season and to know that we've got them for two more years with an option, I think, is a huge piece. And the, you know, giving up prospects is tough. And I think that the three prospects the Astros gave up were three in the top, you know, maybe our top 20 list of prospects. So while given that is a little tough and knowing the work that's gone in to rebuild the farm system and what that's done for the big team, for the big club, has been huge. But I think shoring up the rotation for Houston, knowing that we've got enough offense, we've proven that we've got enough offense, pitching just kind of started to, you guys all saw it in May and June. And then last month we had a few road trips that were just really bad and pitching just didn't perform. I think now shoring up this, this rotation, adding Verlander to it is probably the final piece that in my opinion, and not even just as an Astros fan, but just as a fan of baseball, I think puts the Astros back into that favored spot of winning the AL.
Bill, let me ask you, you're a baseball nut for years, but your rotisserie league, I believe, just national enough players. how would you like to have had Verlander to choose among for your starting pitching? I mean, the guy throws faster in innings 4 through 7 than he does in innings 1 through 3.
Right.
His command, he's got, what, 3 no-hitters. I mean, obviously one of the most respected pitchers in the game as far as being a teammate, as far as his smarts, as far as his skills. What are your thoughts on Justin?
Well, my take is this. I remember we moved to Phoenix in 2000, and it was the 2001 World Series with Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson on the D-backs. Mm-hmm. That's all you need. And I know that's what Ryan's thinking, right? Whether it's Keuchel or whoever, with Verlander, having two dominant starters is massive in a mm-hmm. series. So the offense will take care of itself, but when you've got pitching, ooh, look out. So that's the way I look at that, is they've built this the same thing that the D-backs did, and they were able to hang on in a 7-game series and beat the Yankees that year. So good luck.
Bill, let's jump to tennis, because there's really nothing else in baseball. I think we're kind of in the dog days, and we're going to come around the corner here in a couple weeks. But, you know, the playoffs are really setting themselves up. There's only two races, really, the wild card in the West and the Central in the NL.
Yeah, the American League wild card will be a lot of fun.
American League wild card, yeah, there's three or four teams that are right there. But, Bill, why don't you give us a little quick rundown, a recap of your Bill and Cindy's excellent adventures in Flushing Meadows.
So over 3 days, we spent 28 hours on the grounds at the USTA Tennis Center. And it's two different stories. There's Bill, who sits at Arthur Ashe. We have reserved seats in Arthur Ashe. I sit there and let the tennis players come to me. But my wife, who's the real tennis fan, I see her maybe an hour or two each day, because she is traveling from outer court to a practice court here to stalking a player, because she knows where they enter the grounds and walk to the clubhouse. she had a great time. We had a lot of fun. We saw, you know, some of the best players ever play, right? Federer, Nadal, Venus Williams. I mean, it really was so much fun. The actual tournament itself is a little jacked up. You've got the lower half of the men's draw. The highest seed left is the 17 seed. And with Murray dropping out as a 4 seed, it really screwed things up. You've got really a showdown coming in the semis with Roger and Rafa, which, you know, really is going to be fun. And if someone is going to be in their first major final from the lower half of the draw. So whoever wins that half has never been in a major final before. So that's kind of cool. On the women's side, you got to be pulling for Venus. Madison Keys plays tonight. She'll be fun to watch. Pliskova won easily today in her round of 16. So she was the 1 seed. That's who Cindy likes for the women's side. So had a great time. I'm telling you, if you've got any kind of love whatsoever for tennis, you've got to spend a day at Flushing Meadows. It's just insanely fun. So that's it.
How many courts are there, Bill?
There are 17, 18. There are 18 courts that have matches going on at any given time. 18. Oh, it's actually 20. There's 17 plus the grandstand, Louis and Arthur. So there's 20 courts, and there is stuff going on every court the first week. You know, the doubles started up on Thursday. We were there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So you can watch doubles matches.
Is there a separate practice courts, or do they use those 20 courts for practice as well?
There are six separate practice courts, which have grandstands you can sit and watch. You can go down on the ground level underneath a tunnel and kind of watch them at ground level through the fence. And they put up on a giant screen who's going to be practicing where at what time. So it's just really an amazing event, really well run, and with a ton of people there. It's just packed. So
that's cool. Yeah. Todd, you want to do a little football update before we actually get to football?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The Premier League's on international break. Bad news for the U.S. They help me, Bill. Was it Costa Rica they played?
Yeah. I'm trying Costa Rica.
Yeah. And they lost 2-0, which is huge. Yeah. They actually have Honduras tomorrow night. I believe it's at 5:35 Eastern time, but our backs are against the wall. And if this squad doesn't make the World Cup, that's just an epic collapse. I'm sure we could talk more about epic collapses in college football. And part of us postponing to today makes us be able to talk about maybe a collapse last night. Yeah. But that said, international break for the Premier League, and God, U.S. has some work to do for sure. So pressure's on.
I was at a pizza joint in Plainview the night of that game, picking up some pizza to take back to the hotel after a long day at the Open. And I think the guys working the front counter, all six of them, were all Costa Rican because they could take their eyes off the TV. And they seemed happy. They were very happy.
Bill just walked out with a tip jar. They didn't even pay attention to him.
Didn't even notice.
It's funny because I was at the beach fishing all day, was heavy into college football, and I'm a big soccer guy, as you guys know. But shame on me. I kind of just thought, you know, hey, we're going to take care of business. I remember looking at my phone, down 1-0, and then late down 2-0. So it was certainly disappointing, and, again, a lot of work to do for USA.
Yeah.
Well, guys, let's turn to college football. Obviously, so good that college football is back. It was a good weekend. Game started on Thursday, and then we had games Friday. And obviously, then Saturday was the big shindig. Because the focus of today's episode is kind of on the state of Texas, let's start there because, three.
Why are we doing that to Ryan? I mean,
three absolute meltdown. I don't even think you can call it Texas and Baylor losses meltdowns. Those were just beatdowns.
Yep.
Let's start with last night's game, though. Probably no coach on the hot seat more than Kevin Sumlin in College Station, Texas A&M, SEC school. They go to UCLA. They're playing Josh Rosen, who's one of the Heisman favorites. They jump on him quick, and I mean quick. They were up and looking good. I mean, just running the ball, defense. And I kind of had my eyes on the other game that was on, the West Virginia, Virginia Tech game. And at one point, you know, I think when we all kind of tuned in, guys, on the text, 44-10 is A&M's lead in the third quarter. I think with 7 minutes left in the third quarter, 44-10, they have a 34-point lead.
Let's clear that up a little bit. Remember, 38-10 at half. And somehow UCLA managed to stop them on two drives to convert field goals. So they kicked two kind of, you know, field goals. It's 44-10, this thing's over, right? Now we're back at 7 minutes left in the third.
So who wants to start on that second half? I don't know if you want to say comeback, meltdown. I don't know if you're giving blame and credit. Is it 50-50? Is it 75-25? And if so, to which team? Is it 99-1? I mean, obviously Rosen and his teammates had to make the plays. But, I mean, it's kind of like – it's like a family of deer in the freeway, and you just – each one of them just watches all their family get killed, and they couldn't do anything. Their defensive backs were just – I mean, it was unbelievable how beaten down they were getting. Todd, you want to jump in here? Go ahead.
Sean, let me take a deep breath. All right. So I don't know if I can explain why it happened, but I think I texted you guys. If I was smart enough and in college, my thesis would be about momentum in sports, right? I mean, 34 points, they were doing so well. and you just saw it slowly turning. And God, there had to be 10 or 11 things that had to happen for them to come back and win 45-44. And every one of those things happened.
Ryan, did you well, watch that game?
I didn't, but I did see some highlights and, of course, read you know, all of the posts of my fellow Texans who are Aggies here. And, you know, a lot of them are harking back to the days of the Oilers Oilers crash against the Bills. You
Frank
know,
Wright.
Yeah, that
Frank
it just
Wright.
Looked,
yep.
yeah, it just looked the same thing. It was, you know, you've got the talent, you've got the strength, you've got the system. And, you know, whether it's a coach getting complacent or players getting complacent. But, you know, most of these guys were saying, you know, coaching as far as A&M, just they got outdone. And, you know, whether, again, it was complacency or they didn't have a game plan for keeping a lead or whatever it may be. Going back and watching some of the highlights and reading a lot of the things about specifics that happened in that. In that game and blowing a 34-0 on the other side of the ball there. That's just
my favorite story out of this whole thing is that there's a Texas A&M board of one of the members of the board or the regents.
Yep.
Already said publicly, we got to fire this guy. He's the one who's going to be part of that team to decide whether he stays or goes. He's already said publicly he's out.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Already calls for Chip Kelly getting a phone call.
It was tough because their starting quarterback gets injured. If you watch the game towards the end, every time like the freshman quarterback from A&M, he made like a good play. It just wasn't enough. Right. He had that sweeper on the end where he ran in for a touchdown, but he stepped out, and then they went backwards on two consecutive plays, and then they missed a field goal.
Right.
Any of those things go right, and they win the game. You know,
how about the pick that wasn't, Sean? The ball went right through the defensive back's hand.
Yeah,
man. Right
through his hands.
How does he not intercept that ball?
Yeah,
I've heard some A&M homers complain about the final touchdown that he didn't really have control. That he was kind of bobbling that a little bit on his knee, and nobody called it. No review. It was a touchdown. I mean, you're sitting there in the Rose Bowl. Who's gonna try and take that away?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, Ryan, also two other games, as we mentioned. Texas, you know, rebuilding coming. Tom Herman going to take that team and do some good things with it. But they get really out-muscled and punched in the face by another team that I think has something to prove, and that's Maryland. Both those guys are Urban Meyer proteges, DJ Durkin and Tom Herman. But I think, if I'm right, Texas had three defensive touchdowns or special teams touchdowns. So they really got beat 51 to, you know, take away their defensive scores like we did in the Gator game. How about up in Waco, Ryan, outside of Dallas, Baylor Bears, they get beat by a school called Liberty. you know,
I think isn't Liberty a Christian university? And I think that's some of the jokes going around is that, you know, Liberty had God on their side, and that's the only way that they could, win that game or something.
Because you know Baylor didn't, right?
Right, yeah. Well, you know, that's after everything that's gone on at Baylor, you know, the good Lord turned his back to.
And one more game in Texas. Todd, we can skip it if you want, but our mighty Gators did not look very mighty. We lost to Michigan, clearly, I'm impressed. I tip my hat to Michigan. They played a good game. They looked strong. But good Lord, I haven't seen as putrid of an offensive display from a top-level team. 11 rushing yards. 11 rushing yards.
I saw that.
Could it be Michigan's defense?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I do think that's part of it. But, you know, I mean, Bill, our offensive game plan, I don't even know what we were trying to do.
Right.
We had no screen passes. We had no quick slants. Right. We had nothing. And this freshman quarterback, so Michigan just said, look, they're not going to beat us long, so let's just put 9 guys in the box.
Yeah.
We don't have to blitz. We're just going to send 7 guys against 5 linemen. And it was tough. To watch.
Stop me before I freeze, or if I don't freeze, stop me. So there's so much to talk about, right? So Felipe Franks, I'm leaving him in there and getting him experience. I'm not bringing in the Notre Dame quarterback. I forget his Zaire. I'm not sure.
Malik Zaire. Yeah.
Yeah. Apologize for that. But never take him out, right? Second thing, McElwain's supposed to be an offensive guru. This is the third year that he's in control. Terrible. Our strength is supposed to be the offensive line. Obviously, they're terrible. We had 10 guys suspended, two superstars. Terrible. I mean, the list goes on and on. Let me – Bill and Ryan, I'm not sure how much of the game you watch. Sean and I watch way too much of it. When's the last time you saw a team that had two, not one, two pick sixes, and technically it was not a blocked punt because it went 12 yards, but we blocked the punt, forced a 12-yard punt. So two pick sixes and technically almost blocked punt, and you get blown out. That almost never happens. That almost never happens. It should have been 33-3 if you take the two pick sixes away, and it's just a bad, 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 bad opening game for Florida in the 2017 series season.
But the good news is it's not an SEC game, so you never know, right?
Yeah, it's not trending well. That's the problem.
Just take that, Sean, I'm sure you're headed there. Take that over to what happened to Florida with Florida.
Well, we got Northern Colorado coming up, which should be a win. But then we have Tennessee and Kentucky. Ooh. All of a sudden, I mean, we could be 1-3 very easily. And gosh, you got to win early and often in college football.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if you saw this stat, but I shared it on Twitter. So this is teams with games under 250 yards total offense since 2010. All right. Wake Forest has had 27 games since 2010 under 250 yards. Second place is Florida with 22 games of 250 yards or less offense. Now, there's Kentucky, Kansas, Vandy, Maryland, Illinois, and Boston College in that list. Off to the right-hand side, they say, here's the average recruiting rank since 2010 of those schools. Listen to this. Wake Forest with 27 games under 250. Their average recruiting is 64th in the nation. The lowest on that list, other than the Gators, is Kentucky at 38.5. Florida has ranked – average recruiting rank is 9.4, and they have 22 games with 250 yards or less.
They're a top 10 recruiting team, and they have that many.
Unbelievable. Games. So,
well, it's the same coaching staff. The same coaching staff doing the recruiting.
Yeah, McElwain and Nussmeier, and they have a lot of work to do. Yeah. Is a 60-point outburst against Northern Colorado going to do it? I think until you see it against Tennessee and against Kentucky, and you know. I just think the formula was written for how to beat Florida this year by Michigan. Just load the box. And if the offensive play calling is going to be as bad as it was, it's going to be a long, long season. So anyway, what games do you want to go to next? What else did you see out there in the college landscape? Ryan, let's start with you. Any, you probably didn't have a lot of chance to watch. Was there anything that you saw?
You were busy, huh?
pretty busy there. Pretty busy. I think just some of the I did read something, and I was trying to look it up here while I was listening to you guys finish that part. But I think Sean, you were hitting on something that this article touched on, and it was kind of the watering down of talent, or more so maybe the spreading out of talent, and how some of these the top level recruiting schools aren't getting the level of talent that they used to get because guys that are going to look at schools want to get play time. And they're looking less at the school that they're going to be playing for and looking more so to their opportunity to not compete so much with other top level talent around the country for playing time. And so you're seeing some of these guys that may not come up as a super high level recruit, but the talent is there and they're playing at some of these more mid-level teams. It's just kind of changing the landscape of what college football teams are starting to look at when you get below say 10 in the rankings.
Yeah. It's a good call.
What are your thoughts on that? Considering what you were just kind of saying about, these high level recruiting teams and they're not really performing up to, expectations.
Unless they're from Alabama. Sorry.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If you're a decent quarterback and you want to play at a Florida school, you're not picking Florida State right now. But there's a kid now that's going to get a start next week that's going to get a chance to play because DeAndre Francois, clearly a, if he wanted to be, the next 3 years, and he'll probably get a medical redshirt for this year because he only played 3.5 quarters of football. You know, Todd, you and I aren't by any means Florida State fans, but it sucks to see a good player like him go down and, you know, in a game that was out of reach on a play that wasn't going anywhere, to see him blow up his patella the way he did. So I guess, Ryan, the reason for saying that is there's a kid who went to Florida State because that's where he wanted to go to play because he wanted to play on a good team, and he's going to get a chance now to play. You know, there's right. There's the kid, J.K. Simmons, I think is his name, at Ohio State, who is the running back, is just going to be a stud. And his first game against Indiana was he broke Maurice Claret's freshman running record in his first game. Only three other players have started at tailback as a freshman, Maurice Claret and Archie Griffin. And this kid started. Archie Griffin played in his second game against North Carolina. He's going to be a good player. I mean, he might Wally Pip Mike Weber, who was the Big Ten, you know, offensive player of the year last year. So I don't know. Todd or Bill, let's wrap up before we look ahead to next week. Any other games stand out to you? We saw our old quarterback, Mr. Greer, take his first loss as a college football player, Todd, last night, but he looks tough. A good looking wife in the stands.
like I said, easy Brent Musburger, easy.
That was actually a fun game to watch. It was a back and forth. I gotta tell you guys, I didn't watch the very beginning of the game, and I watched it when Virginia Tech ran on the field and they played Enter Sandman, you know, what they like they do, and that's their Metallica song they run on. And as I'm watching the first couple series, I just said to myself, God, their new stadium looks like the Redskins stadium. And I never knew they were playing at the Redskins Stadium until they finally threw a pass over the center and I saw the logo and I said, no wonder it looks like the Redskins Stadium, because it was the Redskins Stadium. We have one game left tonight, right?
Yeah. Real quick, I'll go back. How about SC against Western Michigan? I know Western Michigan had that great run last year, but really sort of shocking that SC didn't handle them better, because that's final score, what, 49-31, is not even close to what happened.
Yeah, it was
but
close.
The ability,
31-31, I think.
Absolutely, in the fourth quarter. Yeah, they scored two of those touchdowns late in the game to get that thing. And then you have to bring up the kid, Jake Olson, the blind center. You know,
very cool.
Lost his sight via cancer and was able to, you know, really just have a moment. And those kinds of things really help, right, when we got all this other stuff going on in the world, and really especially down where Ryan's at, to have a little piece of that.
And Bill, that's a story that Chris Fowler, you know, it was on College Game Day, I think 8 years ago, when he was like a 10-year-old. You know, Pete Carroll brought him under his wing, and he knows what a big fan he's been of the program. So to see him get to where he's at today, and the way he ran on the field, and you know, the referee kind of kept him in his place, and it was really cool moment, and snapped that ball perfectly back for the extra point. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean, I'll go back too. I mean, gosh, we could talk to midnight about if we can talk about college football at midnight, but gosh, Riley Carpenter's Gamecocks looked pretty impressive.
Ooh, very.
Beating a very trendy NC State pick.
Yeah.
So maybe Coach Muschamp has things going in the right direction there in Columbia.
Yeah, let's just point out that Muschamp scored 35 points. His team scored 35 points, and Florida scored how much? 17.
Three offensive points.
Yeah. You know, well, arguably, South Carolina started with it. South Carolina opened with a kickoff return to open the season, so they had 28 on offense. Yeah, Georgia looked good. Sony Michel and Nick Chubb ran for a lot of yards. They got a big game at Notre Dame next week, which I think we'll talk about.
About that game. Jacob Easton is not starting. Frome is going to get the start.
Interesting. And what's the reason behind
Easton
that?
Easton is week to week because of a sprained knee. He got hurt. So Easton, if you look at the stats, Easton went 1-for-3 and was hurt in the first quarter. Frome played 3 quarters, went 10-for-15. This, you mentioned Wally Pipp just about 2 minutes ago. This may be the ultimate Wally Pipp if Frome leads a team in and Eason never comes back, that, you know, it could happen. It could happen.
Yeah, that's college football, though, isn't it? So, actually, let's get to the picks, because I we're going to hit a little college, and then we're going to talk
sports, right?
Yeah, NFL. NFL kicks off this week, right? Thursday night is the, I believe it's the Chiefs at the Patriots.
It is.
Yes, sir.
Starts off the NFL season, the traditional Super Bowl champion starting at home.
Hey, guess what I don't have to do next this week in the world of the NFL? The late, you know, the doubleheader Monday night, they've been doing that for years. The late game is Chargers Broncos. I don't have to stay up late and watch that.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Chargers are dead to me. I don't give a crap. So it's all good.
go to bed dreaming of Broncos victory, right?
Exactly. Dreaming. It's inevitable. So.
Right. All right, Todd, you're our picks. You got five games for us to pick in both leagues, right? In college and in pro?
I may even have a bonus game, Sean.
Okay. So, all right.
Four of these college games stood out like a sore thumb, and then I just did one kind of fun, and hopefully my connection doesn't blow out on you. So, Sean, let's start with Oklahoma at Ohio State. Ohio State given 7.5. It's a pretty interesting game to lead off.
Are we picking straight up or with the points?
What do you think, Sean?
Let's go with the points, I think, because that makes it interesting, because obviously you got to think then about the backdoor covers and things like that. So, I will say the Buckeyes come back, and you know they started out slowly against Indiana. They obviously ended up dropping 49 points on. They can score fast, but the Indiana quarterback really impressed me. They were quick out of the box. I think they had 90 plays from scrimmage. They really gives Oklahoma, who already likes to play fast anyway, a nice textbook. I think the Buckeyes win, but I think it's close. So I'm going to say the Buckeyes win, but they do not cover 7.5.
I'm on that same board. On board with you, Sean. I'm going to say that Oklahoma in the points.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a lot closer than some people think it's going to be. So yeah, I don't think Ohio's going to cover 7.5.
Gosh, I'm going to go the same as you guys, but I think Oklahoma pulls the upset in Columbus.
Wow.
I think they're brand new coach. I think it's going to be a sellout game for Oklahoma, and I think they pull the upset and win outright.
I saw a stat. Urban Meyer's lost two bowl games in his career. He came back and won the national championship the following years in both situations. So, and they lost their bowl game last year, obviously, to Clemson, which is causing, just a little side story, is causing a ton of controversy up here in Columbus, because the Clemson band at halftime spelled out 31-0 a la Script Ohio. And the Buckeye Nation is livid about this. And I, first of all, have been on Twitter saying, like, look, if they would have spelled out 35-31, the score of the championship game against Alabama, no one in Columbus would care. And they're like, it's classless, it's rubbing salt in the wounds, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, if you're worried about Clemson's band, you know, right. then, you know, they're like, well, Ohio State band would never do anything like that. And I'm like, well, if Ohio State's band did something like that, they'd have to put 0-31, because it would be – Yeah. So, what's next game, Todd?
Bill, we'll lead up to you. Georgia at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is giving 6.5.
At Notre Dame. I'm going to go with the Irish to cover. That's it.
I'll go Irish cover. This is one of those games that maybe puts the Irish back on the map. They kind of went. They went off the radar last year, as you said, Todd. Georgia starting a new quarterback, but man, I love their running backs. I love Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. I think they could grind easily 250 out on the ground. So I'm going to say Georgia wins, but Notre Dame has the ball at the end of the game with a chance to win. So somehow they're within. So they either win by Georgia either wins by 3 or by 6.5 or whatever, 6. So I'll say cover Notre Dame. But Georgia wins the game.
Notre Dame's giving 6.5.
No, see, I'm giving up the 6.5.
Notre Dame's favored by 6.5, Sean.
Oh my God, are you serious?
I think they're back. Yeah, it's in.
Which should strengthen your argument, right?
Yeah, he's all over that now.
Yeah, you're, then I'm all over that. Yeah,
you get the points. I'm giving up points with Notre Dame.
I'm gonna double check, Sean, because I agree with you. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and I'm gonna take. I think Sean took the words right out of my mouth with Notre Dame covering that. I think that's it's gonna be a game, like Sean said, that puts Notre Dame kind of back in the headlines again.
Yeah, we're gonna use your argument on our side, Sean. Thanks.
Okay, so you're saying they're gonna win by touchdown or more, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, Todd.
Georgia wins outright. Okay. I think I need Notre Dame to prove something to me before I'm a believer. I think, as you said, Sean, they have the running backs, and this backup quarterback is the real deal.
He's good. I agree. He's good.
Auburn, Clemson. Ryan, we'll start with you. Clemson's giving 5.5 at home.
Ooh.
Clemson's giving or getting?
Clemson is a -5.5 favorite.
Okay.
Okay. With Clemson, a 5-point favorite, I'm going to have to take that. I'm going to have to say Clemson covers and give that to Clemson at home. I think the home field advantage for them has always been huge. Obviously, they're testing out a new quarterback because their quarterback is now here in Houston. So I'm going to still take Clemson on that covering.
Sean, I'll jump in. One of the guys I call on is a huge Auburn guy, and he thinks this is their year. They're running the table. So if I believe him, I got to say Clemson at least covers, and I will go ahead and go on a limb and say they win on the road versus Auburn at least covers and wins on the road to Clemson. So I'm saying Auburn covers the -5.5.
All right, Bill?
I'll take Clemson.
I'm looking up really quick. I just want to know what time that game is, because that makes a huge difference if that game
is.
It's a night game. 7 o'clock.
It must be on ESPN then, because Ohio State, Oklahoma is the main game, right?
Yep.
Wow. Death Valley at night is tough. Jordan Hare at night is tough. I think Auburn and Jarrett Stidham, the kid that came out of Baylor, Clemson has a great returning defense. 6.5 points, so that's a lot.
5.5.
5.5. It's a close game. I will take Clemson to win, but give me the points. I'll take Auburn with the points.
Bill, we have Stanford at USC. Ooh. USC given 7. You're the West Coast guy. We're leading with you. Go.
Oh, SC did not look good against Western Michigan, but this
is easy without the spread, isn't it, boys?
It starts, yeah, it really does. I gotta give up 7. I think Sam Darnold. I'm gonna go. I've seen Sam Darnold play last year against ASU. I'm gonna go with SC. I'll lay the points. I think SC is gonna beat Stanford handily.
Sean, it's a home game. I'll take USC on this game also.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the Trojans as well. I think Stanford looked good against Rice over in Australia, but now they're back on the mainland, and I think Sam Darnold has a big game. I think you always talk about that jump between week 1 and 2. I think Darnold plays well, and I'll take the points. I'll give the points and take USC.
Yep.
I think I'm going to agree with you guys. However, I think it's going to be closer than we think. In just looking at what Stanford did, only allowing 7 points, USC is allowing 31 points a game. There might be a hole in that USC defense that hasn't been quite tested yet. I'm hesitantly going to take USC in this, but I think this is going to be I think it's going to be a closer game to watch than other folks might consider.
McCaffrey's gone, right? He's in the NFL, right?
He's a Carolina team.
Yeah, I'll stick with this. I'm just kidding. I'll stick with SC.
All right, guys. Last college game. I couldn't pick one. It's a rivalry game. I love rivalry games. Iowa at Iowa State. Iowa's given 2.5. I will lead saying Iowa wins on the road in this big rivalry game.
I walked by a guy today on my morning walk, proudly wearing an Iowa hat and an Iowa shirt, so I'm going with Iowa.
I love it. Sometimes that's the best way to pick a game, Bill.
Sure.
I'll be speaking in the state of Iowa next Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday.
This is working out.
Is Stephanie Iowa or Iowa State, Sean?
Stephanie's Iowa, so I'm going to go with
– There you go.
I'm going to go – going to go the Hawkeyes to beat the Cyclones.
Good call.
And, Ryan, if you don't go Cyclones, just to be different, it's just. It's
no, I think I'm gonna. This, I mean, it's a total crapshoot for me because I have no idea about.
Neither do we. Neither do we.
Yeah, so I'll just ride the bandwagon here and take Iowa in that one.
I love it. All right, Sean, I got 6 NFL games, 5 in a bonus, and not one of them is New England, Kansas City. Sean, NFL, Atlanta -7, Chicago. I'm from Atlanta, so I had to pick that game.
Atlanta.
I agree. Home game for Atlanta?
In Chicago.
And they're given 7. Here I am slowing things down. I'll take the Falcons. Natty Ice.
Yeah, I'm taking the Falcons.
Pittsburgh -9 at Cleveland, Sean.
Cleveland coming in strong with Deshaun Kizer. They're gonna shock the world and win that game.
What? Pittsburgh all day, and I hate Pittsburgh. That's how bad the Browns are.
Yeah, I'm taking Pittsburgh.
Cleveland covers, but Pittsburgh wins, so I'm officially taking Cleveland. Okay. Bill, Arizona -5.5 at Detroit, who has the highest paid NFL player now of all time, and Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
And the over-under is 48, just for fun.
Arizona's -1.5, right?
Yes, sir. At Detroit.
Yeah. Oh.
I'll jump in. Detroit all day.
Okay.
Detroit all day.
I agree. I'm going to take Detroit.
Yeah, I got the Lions. Bill?
Cardinals.
I knew it. Tampa Bay, your hometown Tampa Bay at Miami.
Yeah.
Sunshine battle. Tampa Bay -2.5.
They're given 2.5 on the road.
Yes.
Wow. Home dog. Oh, Nelly. Look, I'll take the Buccaneers. I think O.J. Howard, Mike Evans, Deshaun. I mean, it's going to be a Jameis Winston aerial display. I love it.
Yeah,
Humphreys is questionable, just so you know.
Mm, true. Yeah, but who's the quarterback down there? Jay Cutler? Oh, my God. Buccaneers all day.
Bill, I got the Bucks too. All right.
Yeah, with a 2.5 point spread, I'm going to take the Bucks.
Okay.
That's a Bucks sweep. All right. Seattle at Green Bay. Just a West Coast coming. Green Bay -3. I'll lead off. I can rarely not pick for Green Bay. Spent way too much time there. I think Green Bay covers.
I'll agree with you. Green Bay covers.
I'm going to take I'll take the team. I'm speaking in Wisconsin on Tuesday. I'm taking Green Bay.
Yep, I'm with you guys. I think Green Bay covers.
All right, bonus game, guys. Just because it's such a great traditional NFC East.
Love it. I know where you're going.
Giants at Dallas. Dallas -3.5. Bill.
I just think Eli Manning owns the Cowboys. He just has a way. I'm going to take the Giants on the road, getting the 3.5.
John,
is Zeke playing or not?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Next man up in the NFL, Sean. Next man up.
Yeah. I know, but is the judge isn't staying the penalty?
You don't get to make your call based on that.
I'm taking the Cowboys.
Oh, you think Zeke's going to play?
Ryan, what you got?
Man, even with Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham both being questionable for that game, man, what was the spread again?
3.5.
No way. 3.5. The Cowboys
4. 3.5. No, Cowboys aren't losing an opening day at home. They're just not.
They did last
year. They did.
No, they did.
Yeah.
Hey, in honor of our fraternity brother, Greg Drylinger, my brother-in-law as well, I'm going with the G-Men, the New York Giants.
Okay.
Sweet.
That's it, guys.
Is that it, Todd?
That's it.
All right, quick finish up. Ryan, we always finish up what you got going on this week. Start with you really quick. We'll hit Todd, then Bill, then I'll close out the show.
Honestly, you know, we're still just being in recovery mode, man. I'm going to probably be in some houses ripping out sheetrock and flooring. I've got a few real estate gigs going on. Of course, we're trying to help as many folks as we can get into temporary housing. So hunting and finding, 3-month leases, 4-month leases for folks is going to be my week.
Good. Ryan, Todd, what do you got? I know you got a fishing
Thanks for that. Tough act to follow, right, boys?
Not at all. You guys would be saying the same thing if you were down here. I guarantee it, and I know it. So don't even it's not even something to follow up.
No, we appreciate you, Ryan, for sure. Hey, Sean, I actually have a fun day tomorrow. I'm taking a client who lives in Valdosta. He's at St. George Island. I found out I'm taking him fishing tomorrow as a little client fun outing. So very much looking forward to that. And get back home tail end of the week and catch up from the Labor Day holiday.
Good. Bill, great episode with Andrea Geller last week. Who do you got coming up? Another buddy of ours.
Yes,
right?
That was good.
Yeah. This week it's Sam DeBoard. So I know you all know him well. And so really a great interview. Fun to talk to Sam because I've never really had a chance to have a conversation with him. So
yes.
Sam DeBoard's coming up. And what's going on here in Florida is just we added a new person to our management team, and we're meeting tomorrow afternoon. I can't wait to kind of implement some new things for Fidelity here in the Tampa Bay area.
Good. That is great. Well, for me, guys, it's a home week before I hit the road for my big fall tour at a lot of different places. So a lot of just touching up decks of PowerPoints and handouts and maybe putting a deal or two in contract here with some new listings and a buyer I'm working on. So, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. But more importantly, thank you for all the work you're doing for your fellow Houstonites and the state of Texas. On behalf of Todd and Bill, I'm Sean Carpenter. Thanks for listening to the Stare Down.